Welcome to Open Sources Guelph on CFOU 93.3 FM, CFOU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz. Spring has sprung, I guess, Adam? Isn't that the Canadian way? We have nothing else to say is to talk about the weather, right? It's the grass is riz. Isn't that how it goes? But
the grass is riz?
The grass is riz. I wonder where the birdies is. I'm pulling that out of the air. It's lodged in there somewhere. I hope it's not a rude limerick, but...
I think the grammar's lodged in there somewhere, too.
Yeah. Everyone's madly Googling that to see where it comes from. I don't even know. It just came from my head, so...
Lodged like
it's all this beautiful fresh air and sunshine is, you know... Lifting the cloud that was the winter of the pandemic of 2020, whatever.
One. It's not over yet.
Oh, yes, that's right. It's 2020.
The future is now. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world. And sometimes we interview local newsmakers and politicians, too. But this week, though, we've just got the news. And we are going to talk about the virtual conservative convention that happened last weekend, where the conservative membership finally embraced climate change is real. Just kidding. Unfortunately, I mean, there was also a Supreme Court decision today that pretty much plays into that, and we'll talk about all that. And then the two Michaels remain detained in China, and there is now an international effort to finally bring them home, including some much-needed assistance from the United States. Will that help? And finally, we will discuss the new exhibit at Guelph City Museums. It's all about CFRU and the 40th anniversary of the station, and we'll talk about why community radio still matters. But first... The Ontario government released its second pandemic budget, and they did indeed brand it that way. And
is that official, like on the letterhead? Second pandemic budget?
It was literally in the first paragraph of the press release. Yeah. Sometimes I don't make things up for humor. but seriously, though, it is probably... a good even keel status quo given everything that's going on budget. A lot of hay has been made out of the deficit, understandably so. It is not an illegitimate question to ask about the deficit. But I think the real question people are wanting to get to the bottom of is the budget worth all the deficit spending? And I think that is the big question of the budget, and there seems to be a pretty obvious answer, and that is no.
Right, if ever. I think 10 years from now, whatever the government is, the way this was written, it's assuming it's going to be a conservative government, and you never know, but they're still going to be blaming COVID 10 years from now as to why the budget isn't balanced. In these situations, there's always an excuse as to why the budget isn't balanced. It's usually the previous party that was in power, right? It's like, does anybody recall? And I'm sure you do, Adam. Go back a little bit to the previous election, which was 2018. What was Doug Ford's number one thing? Was balancing the budget. Never shut up. If anything's a billion, there's many billions in this budget. If there's anything that Doug Ford said a billion times, if not to himself, then to the people, it was, we're going to balance the budget. Oh, sorry about the improv there. just let that tape roll. Yeah, lots in here, of course. The thing, as I said, the thing's never going to be balanced. $440 billion net debt in, I think, by 2023-24. So it's not happening. $33.1 billion deficit for the fiscal year. They're saying that it'll be balanced in 2029. Don't hold your breath.
And spending, if not sooner.
If not sooner, yeah. You know what that means, but there is one way to do that, right? And that's to get the knives out, which is, there was a little bit of that. I did see something from, let's just say, certain educational channels that there are going to be cuts to education. A lot of the propping up that was done for COVID will disappear as of the fall. And I did hear from somebody who's a teacher in Region of Peel who said, they have been told that the cuts are coming. So this isn't a chop free thing. And of course the other parties wouldn't be doing their jobs if they didn't say, this is terrible. all three, NDP, this is not enough. Liberals, there's not enough for this and that and the other thing. And the same with Mike Schreiner, who was on yesterday saying similar things. They all had slightly different takes. In Mike's case, it was climate.
Mm-hmm.
Also mentioned homelessness and healthcare. I think they all mentioned healthcare. NDP was focusing on the fact that there were, the paid sick days still haven't appeared, which is pretty much still hammering a partisan point that may exist outside of the realm of the budget. Like it's sort of a budget item, but you could work on that somewhere else. And the Liberals, it was suggesting that the government needs to focus on the strong recovery, education, women, and the racialized. And they were all kind of sticking to those talking points. It didn't matter what media outlet, except for this one, we're listening to. That was the message.
Mm-hmm. The partisanness of the whole paid sick days thing, I mean, it is purely partisan because Andrea Horvath was in Question Period today saying, like, hey, yo, where are the paid sick days? And the finance minister, Beth Len Fulvey, that's a mouthful, so I apologize. But he was getting up saying, you know, well, there's this federal program that's pretty good, except like nobody's really using that federal program, which is kind of the core problem with that program, as any, you know, workers advocate will tell you, is that you kind of have to apply in advance. So if you like become sick tomorrow and you apply tomorrow, you won't get the money for, you know, weeks/months, because you have to go through a whole application process versus paid sick days where it would just show up your next paycheck. It's a total false equivalency. It's a total buck passing thing. So it's totally political. And it is something, I mean, that was accounted for in a previous piece of provincial legislation that the Ford government altered when it took power. So it would be wicked easy for them to alter it back. And there would probably be, I was going to say bipartisan, but there are more than two parties in the legislature. So quad partisan support.
Quad partisan. I like it. Yes. As coined by Adam A. Donaldson in 2021, quad partisan. Yeah. It's got to be in there.
So it could be easily done. And the education thing is a big part of it for sure, because it's not like strictly in terms of cuts, like cuts in quote marks. It's not a cut, but it is like there was $4 billion in spending last year to help schools get ready for some form of in-person learning, upgrades to schools, different infrastructure items, HVAC improvements in some cases, hiring more teachers, certainly hiring, you know, people who are, I mean, essentially greeters, who direct, you know, kids to the right door to go in and out of and that sort of thing. And I mean, without that funding, all that stuff is gone. Well, I mean, obviously the improvements would remain. They wouldn't rip out the capital improvements, but I mean, there are people right now who are basically making this hybrid model possible. And what the budget is essentially doing, and there's also been memos in the Ministry of Education that the Globe and Mail and others have reported on, that they're basically going to keep the hybrid learning model to an extent, but they're taking away all the stuff that makes the hybrid learning model possible. And I mean, and there are teachers right now, and my sister's actually one of them, who are doing both. They are both a virtual classroom teacher and an in-person classroom teacher. Because my sister does a bit of special ed, so, you know, that's obviously in person. But she's also doing virtual classes as well. So, I mean, this puts an enormous amount of pressure on teachers if all of a sudden all of the, I guess even minimalist funding to make the school year, such as it was this year, possible, is suddenly gone. And that's a big thing that it seems like no one's kind of addressing yet. But it's also one of those things that I think, if there's been a trend in Ontario provincial budgets during the Ford era, is that when we get a week or two out, that's when the real meat of it comes out. That's when people get around to reading the fine print. So, I mean, that's something to keep an eye on in the next couple of weeks, is what's going to happen with all this provincial funding for education.
Well, absolutely. Because when it drops, they're not able to do the deep dive. But like you say, there's lots of, I heard some commentators delivering as Beth Len Fulvey was speaking, and I was like, you know, it's not going to be super in depth. They'll just nail a couple of points and then, but yeah, there'll be a lot more that will come out. Of course, it is what was the official line? Was this budget is to protect people's health and the economy, right? That was the, I think that was the, maybe a, that's my variation or spin on the title. So it was like, we're still going to put money into COVID supports, but the economy, the mystical amorphous economy.
To Bethlen Felvey's credit, though, he did say, you can't have a healthy economy without healthy people.
Oh, yeah. And that's like, some of the points that we're making were very, weren't exactly bog standard conservative things, right? This budget, I think that this budget could pass for, say, a liberal budget of the past in a lot of ways.
For sure. Yeah, for sure.
What were some of the health things? Was adding a wing to the hospital in Peel, redoing Trillium Health, which was the hospital near where I grew up. It's also within full view of the row of crosses at Camilla Health there. You can stand there and look, and the hospital is there. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but that shot is always on the news. It's like, well, you've got this hospital. It's still a fairly good hospital next door. I haven't been there in a long time, thankfully. What else? $1 billion for that was, is that strictly for vaccines? I can't quite remember.
Yeah,
administration, I think, is getting $1 billion. So,
except there's some like overlap between the funds that public health has already gotten, and that exact amount is uncertain, but I mean, that's $1 billion, and I have a feeling that's probably going to be a low ball.
Yeah, because sometimes these announcements are a bit of a rerun, like the one about broadband. I feel I've heard the broadband thing before. It's like broadband, subways, you know, money for transit as well, which was probably already in the pipe that you can kind of dust it off and say we're going to do this again. I think it was a billion for Hamilton, which happens to be the hottest one of the hottest. I mean, all real estate markets are burning up right now, but Hamilton is the new, you know, Hamilton's the new Mississauga in terms of down the road. We've got this. That's a completely another story for another day. And interestingly, the return, they're studying the return of the Northland to Cochrane. I was like, wow, the railway that was cut from, used to leave regularly from Toronto up to the North, Ontario Northland. I don't know if there's a greater purpose to that, like whether it's industry or they would use that line for getting stuff from the Ring of Fire, which doesn't fully realize. I don't know. I was just kind of doing my own speculating there. But yeah, nothing happens within the budget without a reason. Mm-hmm. And one more quickly before I forget, the $50 million for faith-based and cultural organizations that have been impacted by COVID-19. So, of course, the rabid anti-mask churches will be the first ones to claim that, I'm sure, right? What hardship we felt. Give me $500,000. I don't know. I can't say that for sure, but everybody whines until there's free money, and then it's like, oh, yeah, it affected us.
Well, I mean, there's also the fact that, I mean, there are a lot of churches that have been, and other religious institutions like the, you know, the Guelph Muslim Society, who have been following public health guidelines, not having in-person services, or following public health guidelines to have limited in-person services. I know there are a lot of churches in Guelph that have been broadcasting to, you know, YouTube and Facebook and other outlets their services. And I mean, and because you don't have people there in person, the tithings are affected. And so, I mean, that I'm a little, speaking as a stark raving atheist, I'm a little sympathetic.
It's a first for open sources. Yeah.
to that, but I mean, you're right. The flip side of it is too that if you're giving away free money, everybody's going to line up, including the people like the Trinity Church up the road in Waterloo Region, who, you know, Randy Hillier drove all the way there to receive services because he's just like super into church or something. But I mean, Paul,
not really, but yeah, we've talked about him before, and
yeah, I mean, it's a lot of it. A lot of it is fine. The question is, and, you know, Andrea Horvath got to this in her comments after the budget. It's like it feels like kind of like a post-pandemic budget. And that's also not where we are at the moment. Yeah. Like there's everyone's talking third wave. There were 2,300 some odd new cases today, and that's up from like 1,700 some odd new cases yesterday, and so that's not the direction we want to go in. meanwhile, all the Ford government seems to be talking about is how do we open up? How do we open up? How do we open up? And it's like, well, all the warning signs are there that we're going to have to close. So why are we doing that? You know, you look at the public health data, half of all the new cases are the variants of concern. That, you know, kind of the typical safety measures we've been using are not as practical when there are variants. And this is the other thing, when you look at the public health data, it's like they're able to identify when the strain of COVID, you know, I guess to use unscientific language, doesn't look right. But there's like more than three variants out there. And so when you look at the data, it's like we have thousands of cases of mutated COVID strains. We're not entirely sure where they are or where they came from, or, you know, that's, I mean, that's a kind of an undercurrent that I don't think is getting a lot of airtime because the focus is almost entirely on vaccines and reopening right now.
Yeah. That strain's not right. Yeah. It's something like that. But part of it too is this contradiction that they keep putting forward, where it's like, and Bethlen Falvey did it yesterday too, about the line that we just need the vaccines. So according to everyone, there's like the fridges are stocked, there's vaccines ready to go. We see lines everywhere of people being vaccinated, but they're still trying to imply that there aren't any. It's just really weird. They really, really need to let that go. Like, just work on something else. We know you have your issues with the feds. And one of the issues as well that he also brought up was the money for healthcare, which is separate yet together, I guess, with the budget in terms of budgeting for how everything is going to go forward and how the provinces had been cut via the feds. And that's both, to be fair, conservative and liberal governments, particularly the Paul Martin government slashed the heck out of that. So that is a number that has gone down. I believe it's somewhere in the range of gone from OHIP started off 50-50, right? And it back in the 60s. And then somebody said, hold on to your hats. 50 years later, it's now 25% comes from the feds, to at least to Ontario. And I'm sure the rate is probably different in other places. So, I mean, a fair enough point to raise, but it's one of those ones that they've been raising outside of the budget, just saying that we're not getting enough money for healthcare from the government. But it seems to be coming from conservative or conservative leaning provinces, that kind of messaging. And they're not completely wrong, but they're making it sound like it's the feds that are not trashing healthcare, but some of the implication is some of the problems that we're seeing with rollouts and all of that stuff is coming from the feds. And I think that's a bit inaccurate, let's say.
And that's hopefully something that will get addressed on, I think it's April 19th, we get the federal budget, so we'll have to wait and see.
Yes, which could be a cause for election grumbling, which is what we live for at this show, right?
Well, that's a good segue to the next topic, which is the Conservative Convention that happened last weekend. It happened online, of course. Aaron O'Toole came out, gave a speech where he said, we have to acknowledge climate change as a real issue. It is a real problem. We have fought two elections on the carbon tax and lost. We have to move on. The Conservative, a Conservative EDA in Quebec then put forward a motion that said, to include a line that the party acknowledges that climate change is real and that action needs to be taken on greenhouse gases. And that motion failed. And so that brings us to today. And if you didn't see the breaking news, the Supreme Court of Canada upheld in a 6-3 decision the greenhouse gas pollution pricing program, aka the carbon tax. So that is the end of that chapter. So what's going to happen now?
let the crying begin.
Yeah.
You know, the purpose of conventions in general is to try and get some traction, some attention for your party. And the most difficult thing, regardless of your politics these days, I think, is to get that, you know, eyes on the page and eyes on you. There was that ad making the rounds of Aaron O'Toole. It's like, you might not know me, but they were trying to be funny. Yeah. But it's actually funny in a not in a ha-ha, but in a sad kind of way that he has to do that. Like, you have no idea who I am. And you can bet this week that most of Canada still have no idea who this guy is, right? This party's been through, what is it? It's four leaders in 5 years we're at now. Mm-hmm. But what's become clear from what you're saying about that, the climate change resolution getting voted down, among other things that happened this weekend, is that the schism within them is still so clear. They had done a pretty good job patching it up in the Harper years when the Alliance and Progressive Conservative merger happened, and now we have these Conservatives. But I think what's happening now is hearkening back to the days of the Canadian Alliance all those years ago that kept the Cretan Liberals in power for most of the 90s, mm-hmm. is because that line is back in a big way. When you see it in resolutions such as the one that you mentioned, the battle between, as we always say, the social conservatives versus those that might lean in a more red Tory direction, like O'Toole, or at least O'Toole is presenting somebody who leans in a red Tory direction, because he knows that that is the only way to become the government in this country. It doesn't matter what your party is. It's your base plus certain other factors, namely Ontario and Quebec, which is where the votes are. Then you are the government, right? If you cannot master that, you will not win. And by the looks of everything that happened the weekend and the way that they're going, it's not looking good.
Mm-hmm. Well, that ad is unintentionally funny in a sad trombone way, right? It just O'Toole is stuck. He wants to be like last weekend. The red Tory version of Aaron O'Toole came out to play. And that's fine. That's what he needs to be. But a couple of weeks ago, he's the crap poster, you know, Ontario proud meme factory king who goes outside and like, hey, see that porta potty? That's Trudeau's new office.
Yeah.
And it also doesn't do the fact that, you know, he ran his leadership campaign was on a matter of like, hey, you know, cancel culture. I'm pretty mad about that, too. Free speech on campus. You're darn right. I want more. It's just, you know, that kind of red meat stuff. And so when he tries to make the pivot, it immediately comes off as kind like, well, which version of you is this? Are you a red Tory guy? Because I would have labeled him a red Tory, at least the way he ran in 2017 mm-hmm. as a conservative leader. I would not label him that now with Take Canada Back and I hate cancel culture and, you know, these kind of things. That's red meat base kind of stuff. So I understand that you need to kind of win the base in order to win the leadership. And that's what he did. But if he's trying to make the pivot now, he's ankled by pretty much the people who elevated him to the leadership in the first place. And I mean, there is nuance, of course. Apparently some people didn't like the exclusivity of greenhouse gases featuring so prominently in the motion. I guess they saw it as kind of like a swipe to the oil and gas industry, which, you know, fair enough. But I mean, that's the existential threat. When we're talking about climate change, it's an existential threat. What is the what is the threat? It is greenhouse gases in the air. Well, what's the source of greenhouse gases? Sorry, it's burning stuff. But, you know, you had people saying things like, well, yeah, why are we focused on greenhouse gas as the only pollution? We should also be focusing on clean land and clean water. And it's like, well, you know, oil spill doesn't do much for clean air and clean water either, or clean land and clean water either. But then it goes right down to the crazy. There was somebody from Eastern Ontario that was speaking to the motion that said they weren't going to vote for the motion until health issues related to wind turbines were addressed. Which is just like straight up conspiracy crack pottery, because there's not a single hint of evidence that wind turbines cause health issues. But I mean, if that's what you're struggling with, you can't embrace fighting climate change as a reality because wind turbines make me crazy or something. I mean, that's not much of a base to start from if you're wanting to try and create broader appeal. And that's an issue.
Yeah. And I mean, I've been to enough conventions, and let's call them convention-like gatherings, where when it's in person, you know, the fringe are there with their flyers and their ideas, and it doesn't matter the stripe. They are there. Mm-hmm. They're among all parties. And I think that's the problem with this format, is that when you don't have them, it's kind of, let's say, a little bit discriminatory when you have an in-person convention, because there are people that cannot go. So in the Conservatives' case, I think they will send their like their writing's membership will send a rep or something, right? That's generally how it works, right? And something that came out of that, actually, which I think was at the beginning of the conference, was that structurally, particularly in Quebec, there are a number of writings that have very small numbers. And they I think they may have influenced O'Toole's election and in previous leadership elections. It came out of the merger was like, we need to accommodate Quebec. So they were their membership writings that were small, but seemed to have some kind of undue influence on the party. Well, that supposedly is now gone. They passed some kind of resolution to clip that. And so now you've created not only just anger in Quebec of a sort, but this is among your people, like not necessarily the base, but the base in Quebec is small for the Conservatives. Let's be realistic. So now they're unhappy. The social conservatives, it seems, are unhappy. I will give O'Toole credit for some. He's being creative in terms of if he sticks with the line of appeal that seems to be diving, not necessarily to the left, but when he uses language like, and these are two direct quotes, talking about working families and the connected few getting richer, which when I hear that line, I think Conservative Party and their friends. But the fact that he's using that kind of language is that's him signaling broader appeal stuff. That line could, I'm telling you, that line could come directly out of an NDP policy document or a CCF policy document, right? Just that wording. But the problem is, as we've said, that he's all over the place, right? Mm. You can't modulate on this, right? You need to, because he also said, like, what did he say? I'm the leader. I'm in charge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're in charge, but your base are saying this, 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 and this. And the other overarching thing was, I think, how many times he used the word change, right?
Mm-hmm.
Over and over, it's like, change, we need to change, we need to change. He's signaling to them as like, we need to change or we're not going to win this sucker, right? But I can't see it happening at the rate we're going, because what was the headline that came out of the weekend? It was the one about climate change. That was the thing that was everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond the fact they had a convention, beyond the fact that O'Toole's trying to establish himself, which you read about in editorials. I think even like in the stuff I saw in the Post, which I don't read often, wasn't positive. Normally they are glowing, like, oh, this is great. It's like they were like, well, I don't know, I'm not sure about this. So if there's an election on the horizon, which it sounds like there may very well be, I don't think they're ready.
I mean, they may be monetarily ready with fundraising things.
Well,
but
that's,
I mean,
for sure.
It's so tricky, because, I mean, there may have been positive things that have come out of the convention for party unity and things like that, but that was the headline: Conservative Party votes against motion to acknowledge climate change is real. And that's what everybody's going to think about. Like, think about Stephen Harper. No matter how many times he said he was not going to reopen the abortion debate, he was hammered by every pro-choice group from coast to coast to coast because of the possibility of just from people in his party, even though he himself voted against like the one private member's motion he'd let come to the floor as a way to try and like stifle that experience, that whole circumstance. And so you have to ask yourself, Aaron O'Toole, who are you trying to appeal to? Like conservative base voters? You've got them. And you're not going to turn anybody else around with that kind of stuff. And I mean, so he's, I mean, to get back to the main point, he does have to pick a lane.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we'll have to
accelerate rapidly to the point of speeding, maybe. But hopefully not being pushed like that Mini was with a dump truck. That's what it looks like.
or getting yourself lodged like that big cruise ship or that big cargo ship, Suez Canal. Stories from another time, though. We will have to take a break here and then come right back with our other two stories of the day. You're listening to Open Source as Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Remove the base, the bridge will fall into the fires below. Thank you. be their broker upon my watch. I won't stay with me without the chain. Without the clouds, you won't have the rain.
And that was our Royal Cat Records pick of the week. Royal Cat Records, the big little record shop, 21 Macdonnell in the downtown. Released last week on beautiful red vinyl. I can't wait to hold it in my hands whenever that is, because I'm a big fan of a somewhat lost artist, I guess. Willie Dunn became popular in the 60s and played the, let's call it, the folk circuit until his death. He's kind of, I see him as kind of an anti-Lightfoot. You can kind of hear it in his voice. Anyway, I could talk for hours about Willie Dunn, but anyway, the album is called the Willie Dunn Anthology, and that song was called Broker.
He has the anti-Lightfoot equation.
Anti-Lightfoot, yeah.
That's a shout-out to all everyone who watched Zack Snyder's Justice League on the weekend.
Oh, there you go.
As I will have to watch it this weekend for end credits. Anyway. less funny is what's happening to Michael Spavor and Michael Kovrig, the two Michaels, as they... I was reading a CNN article about this, and there's literally a line in it that says... Or the two Michaels, as they're known in Canada, which is fair. But when you see it in black and white on CNN's website, it sounds a little goofier.
Yeah,
having said that.
a bit of an aside, but the original two Michaels were the couple, the first gay couple to get married when the law changed as well, right? So
that's right. Yeah.
Canada has two sets of two Michaels, but anyway,
we have a proud tradition of Michaels. Yeah, so they have both been tried in a Chinese court under very secretive details. There has been no verdict yet. However, Chinese courts have a 99% conviction rate, so I don't think it looks good for the two Michaels, unfortunately. However, there has been an upswing in the amount of international attention on this. Anthony Blinken, who is the new Secretary of State for the United States, brought it up in negotiations or in a meeting with China that took place in Alaska last week, which was very famous for the Chinese representative taking 16 minutes to make a 2-minute opening statement. Oh. And it seems like... in the meantime, though, not much has changed for the two Michaels, although if you are someone who understands kind of like the diplomatic maneuvering of these things, perhaps there is some hope yet that they could come home sometime in the vague future, I guess.
Yeah, and it does sound like it's the diplomatic channels that are going to solve this, if it is to be solved. It there was about, I think it was 24 diplomats out in the street in support of this trial from various places. It seemed like mostly Europe and European Union as well, US of course. It sounds like it's a violation of international law to not let at least the Canadian and possibly the American diplomats into this, if it's a person from your nation, they're supposed to. But they were saying it's a matter of national security, so we can't. The fact that they were allowed to stand out in the street is something else as well. But it was also in kind of a remote location too. Like, it wasn't in Beijing. The decision will come from Beijing, but it was out closer to the North Korean border. Well, somebody talking about it, it's like you can actually kind of see North Korea from where it was. And I don't know, because that was part of it too, is the involvement. They both had dealings with North Korea, not to get too deep into it, but supposedly that's how they got picked up. But as we know, they got picked up the same, if not the same day, or like within days of Meng Wanzhou getting picked up. And that it's somebody referred to the whole thing as, this is actually the three M's. It's the two Michaels and Meng Wanzhou. It's a package deal, right? So it's like, until the Meng Wanzhou case is dealt with and resolved, and this is where America comes into it, because I had heard there was a reference made to Canada by the Chinese, I can't remember if it was the their spokesperson or whatever, or in their media, was that Canada is like America's henchman. So we're indirectly in this, and that's why the Michaels haven't been directly picked up, because of They were, I believe, because of the Meng Wanzhou case, but it's not. They're trying to get at America through the Michaels more so than us, and we being Canada are kind of in the middle of all of this, right? I don't know about henchmen, but it's more like wingman or wing person, or I don't know.
Well, it's easy to paint it that way because we didn't pick up Meng Wanzhou. There was the United States Department of Justice said, hey, she's going to be passing through the Vancouver airport. We want her. She is wanted for breaking as a leader in her company. She is wanted for breaking Iranian sanctions. Pick her up. And we were like, okay, we follow international law. Sure, we'll pick her up. And, you know, 3 years later, here we are. It's interesting to me that, well, in a number of things that are interesting, but number one is that the shift in attitude, because it feels very much like the Trump administration was like, pick her up. And then we did. And then we, you know, she's been, all these court hearings have basically been about her extradition. But it really seems like America has had no interest in it. Like, there was no, like, statements from the Department of Justice saying, like, what's the holdup? Send her here, you know? And in the meantime, we had the two Michaels. They were picked up in retaliation. It's like, well, no, we don't want to put Meng Wanzhou in jail, at least theoretically speaking. I don't think there was anyone in Canada who wanted to see her in jail. But, you know, we were just, you know, we had an ally say we have a duly executed warrant and cause to have her picked up, and we did. And it just, like, there was no support from the petitioner, the United States, who wanted her picked up in the first place. And that has always been an issue, at least I think at the diplomatic level in Canada. Just like, we didn't want her, the United States wanted her. Why are we suffering the consequences? And at least there seems to be some sort of acknowledgement out of the Biden administration. I think Anthony Blinken did say something to the effect of that they were going to treat the fight to get the two Michaels out of prison as if they were fighting for two Americans, which probably doesn't help the cause with the whole accusation of being henchmen. But still, I think that is the right approach, because this is retaliation against us for an American action. And that is that has been at the core to all of this, is, you know, we don't want Meng. America wants Meng. And it's fascinating to learn. There was a Wall Street Journal article that said that apparently the United States Justice Department, this was before the turnover, was apparently working on a deal where Meng Wanzhou would admit some sort of complicity in dealing with Iran and would agree to a deferred prosecution, and she would essentially be allowed to return to China, and at which point hopefully the Michaels would be sprung. And there hasn't been anything on that since February, because obviously there's a new sheriff in town, and actually the new head of the Justice Department literally just moved into his office this week. So it's a cuck up all around. It's just there's no, I mean, it's a mess of bad intentions and misunderstandings, and I mean, then that makes it so much harder.
Yeah, and that's what it'll take to make it not go away, but to get the Michaels free and resolved would be to let Meng Wanzhou go. There will never ever be an admission of any guilt, that's for sure. I think it's going to have to take, and I've said this before, the secret freighter, maybe the Evergreen, once it's emptied, can pull up to the harbor and just take her away somewhere, Macau or whatever, and it's over. Something else that happened this past week that's occurring on parallel plane was on Monday the sanctions announced over the treatment of the Uyghurs in Xinjiang. Were the four partners, not partners, but the four that on the statement were Canada, US, the EU, and the UK. This has touched a nerve with China. They're getting testy about it, and that's, I think they use language like insulted. This is an insult, kind of like that. So I think in going on the diplomatic channel, they know that there's been some effect. If they feel affronted, offended, or insulted that they would do something like this. I think there were some counter sanctions announced regarding the EU. I don't know about the other countries. I think because of the situation with the Michaels and Meng Wanzhou, that maybe they're not taking any steps towards that. And are the talks in Alaska, as you said, that long opening statement, is that over now or is that still ongoing?
Well, it was last week. So there
it was last week. So it's over effectively, right? It kind of came and went, and it's probably the back channel stuff will be the things to watch. Not as you said, that's the statement that took forever. We're offended that you would do that. Like, typical, get the shoe and bang the table like Chris Jeffers. Like, what are you doing?
Right.
Yeah, there's the showmanship part of it. And then there's the actual diplomacy, which always, in my view, goes on behind closed doors. Or I don't know if these guys golf, but golf.
I mean, there is a united diplomatic effort now, which I think has always been missing from this. It's always been like, I guess this speaks to the lack of leadership from the United States. That it just, you know, there has been no diplomatic effort. It's like, yeah, having 28 diplomats standing outside the courtroom, it's a small thing in terms of, did it help? No, it didn't help. The Michael still, that particular Michael was put on trial and he will probably be convicted later. On the other hand, is standing with a group, standing up to a bully, better for how it looks to a bully? Yes. And this is the thing, is that I saw one person who has an expertise on sort of Chinese foreign policy, that, you know, their reaction to all this, like the 16-minute statement, the
tirade,
suddenly putting the Michaels on trial, it's a reaction to the international pressure, not just to the Michaels, but also to the Uyghur situation. China is getting a lot of international attention right now. It is not great attention. And so they're using the only tools they have, which is obfuscation and punishment. And unfortunately, the Michaels are paying the price. Although Michael Kovrig apparently has gotten access to books after much petitioning.
Oh, wow.
His wife says they have been sort of given him some peace of mind, because, I mean, there's nothing else for him to do really in Chinese custody. So they've allowed him to have books. And
it's not like you're just wearing the bracelet in your mansion, right?
Yeah, your family gets a visa to visit while the world is locked down in the middle of a global pandemic, mm-hmm. which I had to think long and hard about that. And my thought was like, you know what? I'm fine with it, because let the world see that we are making this woman as comfortable as possible while she's in detention, seeing her family, giving her full access to not just the courts, but to the media and to her diplomatic channels. And then contrast that to what's happening in China with the Michaels. Let the world see that.
Mm-hmm.
Good point. Yeah, it's, you know what? I would love to see her put in isolation with a bread and water diet until China sees the light of day. However, I think that's probably going to be equally as
if the freighter pulls up and spirits them away. I don't know. I should have joined the diplomatic corps. It's like, here's how to solve this. Let her sneak off in the middle of the night. it'll be okay.
Yeah, you just
talk about an oversimplification, eh? It's like,
yeah, it's probably best you are not in the diplomatic corps.
Last one day, half a day. It's like, what do you mean there's no coffee? Yeah.
we are, however, glad to have Scotty here at CFRU and everybody participating. And we just want to take some time at the end of this week's show to talk about the exhibit that is on now at Guelph Museums, and you can actually go and see it. You can go in person at Guelph Museums. I think they're allowing 30 people at a time now. You do have to book in advance online. You go to Eventbrite, and you can pick a time and a day to visit Guelph Museums. And while you're there, you can see the CFRU exhibit. So
pretty exciting, eh? Yeah, it was delayed by a year. I'm not sure if people realize this. The actual anniversary was 2020. So CFRU started. Yeah.
We had a full
Thank you,
year
pandemic.
Plan. We were like, so we're going to celebrate this all year.
Yeah. Well, it's not unlike other people putting out, like, if they're having significant birthdays, they're kind of bumping it. It's like, I think I'll have twice as hard a party when this is all over and behind us. Right. So
let's have a sweet 19.
What's that?
Let's have a sweet 19.
Sweet 19, that's right.
instead of Sweet 16. Anyway,
yeah. let her rip. But yeah, so that's it didn't take a year to put together, obviously, but lots of hard work from the staff and other people that dug through their own personal archives for fantastic things forgotten about that you just kind of keep around. And I know that we both do it too, Adam, for sure. I have, you know, posters from our shows, old recordings. And I think that was part of the interesting part of it was some of the things that were in old formats and needing to be revived. Cause you think, say it's 1980 and you have the highest technology, which is some kind of tape. And it sounds fantastic at the time, but then fast forward all those years later and say, how on earth do we get this off of this thing? So
yeah,
thankfully it was kind of a collective effort, but we were able to find some resources to be able to do that and salvage some old data and info, both visuals and sound, that would have in all likelihood just kind of been lost. So it's kind of the bonus part of the project is that things are going to be preserved now, at least to 2021 standard, that may not have. And because there's, for being a radio station, you think about the countless hours, not lost, but the way the old format was that it just went out there and then it was out there. And if something gets preserved, it's generally by accident, right? It's like, oh, somebody made a recording of that and put it in a drawer. So yeah, thankfully we're able, and now everything is archived, like every issue edition. We're talking about magazines. Every edition of this show is archived, and it's preservation is great now. But you know, one day that machine will be sitting there, and be like, "What's this? I don't know." Put it in the e-waste, and then
everything's fine. We got a ton of recordings here that they're in MP3 format. Oh, savage
MP3. What is that? Yeah,
we're on MP89 now. Anyway, yeah, it's that has always been an issue. And it's funny, I was on the weekend just, you know, catching up on articles and things that I bookmarked, and one of them was about the job of this person at the BBC who's the archivist, which is a position they didn't have until like the 90s, who has been like scouring the world for like lost BBC recordings, like turning like independent TV stations in Uganda upside down trying to find lost tapes and things.
Yeah,
and you know, so much of that history is just gone. I mean, unless it was something like the Queen's coronation, and which is something you were obviously gonna save, because, and I mean, something also that's had a predetermined day and time so you could set things up, because it's not as easy as like when I'm somewhere I can whip out a phone and record audio or record video or take pictures. There was a setup and it was very hard, like for breaking news or like on the scene stuff. And because tape was so expensive, they just reused those tapes over and over and over again. And so much of that, you know, the broadcast history is lost. And
so I mean, accidentally, like you say, they turn the world upside down. We shipped it off, and of course it was labeled. I remember seeing this at the station. There would be tapes. I'm thinking particularly from Deutsche Welle. So somebody would have had a classical show and had a tape shipped to them on loan. And it would say, "Please return to Deutsche Welle, blah blah blah, Berlin." but of course, it's been at the station for however many years. There's nothing to play it on anymore, and so that survives, right? And that's it. It's amazing. And you do need this lineage, like this length of time for that to happen, where things kind of accumulate, right? So, and that's what's different from the CFRU period, which does go pre-1980. I mean, officially it's 1980, but there was a period beforehand where there was AM, FM in the 70s.
Radio Griffin.
Radio Griffin, exactly. And the Radio Club, you still see material. Like Radio Club. Go to the exhibit, I'm sure you see something about the Radio Griffin Club. And they had club memberships, and it sounds fantastic. But
I do like to hear this in your day job too, but like there are still like places on campus where the old speaker that would pipe in. I mean, there are fewer of them now, but you know, you go into like an old enough building on campus, see this like ugly brownish speaker on the wall, and you're like, what the heck is that? That's what they used to pipe Radio Griffin through.
and believe it or not, there are still some out there. And forgotten spaces that haven't been renovated or mostly, for the most part these days, it's due to inaccessibility. There'll be this like, and that's actually part of my job that I love, is going into these spaces that have been forgotten and seeing the things that are there, seeing the things that people thought they should save, like particularly old computers that cost a small fortune back in the 70s. It's like, do not throw this out. Or in one instance, in one of the penthouses in the building, in the McNaughton building where the radio station initially was, there's two teletype machines. And like somebody thought that you should keep these things for tech heads and people that are kind of interested in these things like I am. I'm like, oh yeah, this is really cool. But it's like, how do you make it go? What do you do? It's along the lines of the, what was the announcement going back to the budget about, we're going to get rid of the fax machines. It's like, I personally think the fax is great, but I haven't sent one lately, but they do, they sort of served a purpose. I guess everything's a PDF now, but yeah, it's,
well, I mean, there are people who still send faxes. It's, I mean, it's kind of a, I was going to say, it's kind of a niche market, but I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, you know, you're getting, you know you're getting on. But yeah, we, as and people know, we both love community radio and how this and everything works. It's a weird kind of, oh, I was going to use a corporate word. I was going to say synergy, but it's like a club, but all of the places that I've been in the past, when I was a student, I didn't actually have time to do community radio, although I appreciated it and listened to it in residence through a regular radio, not through an ugly brown speaker. But other places that I've been, I've inevitably ended up at the station Queens, as an example, which is one of the oldest radio stations, not just in Canada and in the campus community circuit, but in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, still going, even though its funding was cut in a referendum, but they're still there. They're still sort of inching along as they would have done back in the 20s. But we have to remember that back in the 20s, Radio was the Twitter, radio was the Facebook and the social media, and how revolutionary it was at the time. You can sit where in your sitting room or whatever, and here is the information coming to me, and I don't have to go and get it, and it just comes through the air, and radios were fairly expensive then as well. If you had a radio in your parlor, you're doing all right. But of course, like anything, like any tech, it gets less and less expensive. But yeah, I just found the places I've gone over the years, I somehow always ended up at the equivalent of the community radio station, not realizing that eventually I would end up at one, not permanently, but like for a tenure, let's say, right? So did you find the same thing? You were in media when you were a student, but you weren't directly involved with CFRU, right? But
I was at the newspaper.
You're in the same hallway, though, and you probably said...
I was at the opposite end of the hallway, literally the opposite end of the hallway.
Said, one of these days...
One of these days...
the hall. And, but you were drafted like I was, right, to come on the politics show initially, right? Was that your first regular stint? Was the...
Yeah, I was drafted by Jan and...
was the ballot box, and I was as well, so...
Yeah, so that...
I had been on some shows previously that kind of came and went, but... And we did a bit of editing, and... There's all sorts of opportunities. And I have to say, because now that we're talking about it, there still is opportunities. So for people out there that want to get involved with community radio, you certainly... Campus community radio. I think I was default to community now because we are out in the community. We're not physically at the station, but that's not to say couldn't get involved if you didn't want to beyond being a listener. It's definitely possible. I guess we can talk about that in the wrap up as we do every week, right? But we're getting close to that point too, but I'd like to mention as well something that's happening in terms of pandemic. That the station is kind of extending supports to the community. And if your business organization is in the listening area, which is Guelph, Rockwood out in the county, KW in Cambridge, that the station's offering up a free 45-second ad for you to promote whatever it is that you do. And because this is something that the station wanted to do to kind of do our part, I suppose, to re-energize things in the community as we sort of crawl out of the situation that we're in. If you wanted to do that and you happen to hear this, you can contact Odysseia at outreach@cfru.ca or visit cfru.ca and check that out if it's something that you would like to do, because that is, that's kind of sort of the thing that we do here, right? So.
And the thing that we do, I'm afraid, is over for this week, and that's the end of the show. You can stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook and Open Sources Newswire, or on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. You can listen to the show again every Wednesday, or excuse me, you can listen to the show again every Monday at our website. You can find it at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or get it through your favorite podcast app at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to my news and politics site at guelphpolitico.ca.
And I'm on an old dusty pile of reel-to-reels. No, I'm not. Scotty Hertz on Facebook. I might be. Scotty Hertz on Twitter. And as I mentioned, please visit cfru.ca. for everything that is going on currently at the station, scheduling, promotions, you name it, it is there. And of course, you can always find us here at 93.3 FM.
And speaking of scheduling, DJ Sounds Good to Me is here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be back next Thursday at 5 p.m. for another fantastic edition of Open Sources. Likely, I can't promise, but who knows?
Hope so.
We'll see you. We will see you then.